Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives, sharing their expertise and life stories, making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Well, throughout the centuries, crises have been a regular part of life. And if we think we can control them, when they come, what they look like, how long they stay, when they leave, we're wrong. What we can control is how we respond. And when bad things happen, the way we respond makes all the difference. Today, I'm joined by an expert in this subject. His name is Dr. Jim Taylor, and he's the author of How to Survive and Thrive When Bad Things Happen, 9 Steps to Cultivating an Opportunity Mindset in a Crisis. We discuss what makes an opportunity mindset and how to develop one, why anger can be good in the beginning of a crisis, but then work against us. We also look at what happens when we slip down what Dr. Jim calls the negative emotion chain and how our values can help or hinder us during a crisis. And I think this is such an important book right now because you only have to look at the multiple crises that are happening simultaneously in America right now and how people are choosing to respond to them differently and how those different responses are bringing different results. So let me bring my guest on. Again, the book is called How to Survive and Thrive When Bad Things Happen, 9 Steps to Cultivating an Opportunity Mindset in a Crisis. And my guest, Dr. Jim Taylor. Dr. Jim Taylor, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Vicki. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. Your book is extremely timely. I know you wrote it some time ago. I think it was published last year, but it's extremely timely with everything we have going on right now. So let's just begin with a little bit of your background. I know you've done a ton of work in the psychology of critical performance. What drove you to do that kind of work, and what do you do specifically?
Sure. Well, I do hold a PhD in psychology, and I've always been fascinated with people's ability to perform their best in critical situations. And I've worked with athletes, medical professionals, tactical people, meaning military, and it's always been an area of interest to me. And something that I've seen in my practice as well as in my personal life is that crises occur on a daily basis, as well as once in a lifetime, such as with COVID, and that whether crises are small or large, we often don't respond to them in ways that produce the best possible experience we can within a crisis, but also the best possible outcome. And so my book really evolved out of this idea of crises happen to us, large and small in our lives, and what can we do to get the most out of them, and not only to survive in a crisis, but also to thrive in a crisis if possible.
Yeah, I think that's important, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later on, but I want to just talk about the title of the book. I mentioned earlier it's How to Survive and Thrive When Bad Things Happen, 9 Steps to Cultivating an Opportunity Mindset in a Crisis. So let's talk about that word opportunity, and what's the difference between a mindset and a crisis kind of mindset?
Sure. Well, I make a distinction between a crisis mentality and an opportunity mindset. And so we humans like to think of ourselves as highly evolved beings, and we have this thing on top of our head called the cerebral cortex that separates us from animals. But the reality is that we still respond to the world now as we did 250,000 years ago in the Serengeti, and very similarly to how all kinds of animals respond when their life is threatened. And a crisis at a very basic level involves some sort of unexpected threat to some aspect of our lives. And so, if you don't mind, Vicki, a very brief neuroanatomy lesson that I'll keep very simple. There's a part of the brain at the base of the skull called the amygdala, and it's associated with processing information quickly and immediately and producing emotional reactions. So this was so important on the Serengeti 250,000 years ago, where humans first became Homo sapiens, where a crisis occurred, and a crisis might be might have been being faced with a rival tribesperson with a really big club. And that triggered the survival instinct, and which then caused the fight or flight reaction. We could either attack the threat, the crisis, or flee, and it produced very intense emotions, whether fear, stress, anxiety, or anger. And that led us to react in a very immediate and instinctive way that would mitigate or remove the crisis, that is, the threat to our lives. So that's been wired into us for millions of years. Unfortunately, what worked then doesn't work now, because crises have changed from primitive times. Because in primitive times, the threat was very immediate, it was clear, and it was tangible. But now, and COVID is a classic example here, these crises are often unforeseen, they're not easy to understand, they're distanced in some ways and indirect, and they're also delayed, as we're seeing with COVID, and lingering. And a really difficult part of this about modern crises is that they're beyond our immediate control as individuals. We can't go out and find a vaccine for COVID. We can't immediately treat ourselves when we get COVID. Now, there are some things we can control, such as wearing masks and distancing and so on, but things have, the type of crises we face in the 21st century are vastly different than the crises we faced on the Serengeti 250,000 years ago, which leads me to the need for a different type of approach, what I call an opportunity mindset. And another brief bit of neuroanatomy. There's a part of the brain in the front behind our forehead called the prefrontal cortex, and it's associated with executive functioning. And executive functioning is involved with planning, looking at options, making choices, weighing risk and reward, future versus present. And this is what separates us from animals. We can take control of and alter the way we respond to situations like crises. So a crisis for me is an opportunity mindset. It starts with a very much of a positive orientation. It's about being calm and purposeful and deliberate, and not just this frenzied, oh my gosh, fight or flee. And it's driven by a number of areas that ground us and enable us to stop when faced with a crisis and decide what is the best approach to resolving the crisis and getting through it as best we can.
Yeah. And an important point here, because I follow social media to see, you know, the general feel of how people are feeling. And positive thinking has taken a bashing lately because they're saying it's not enough. And you're talking about much more than that, and you've just really covered that. So I think there's an important distinction there between opportunity mindset and just positive thinking.
Completely. Now, positive thinking certainly is helpful, but I'm not talking about the rose-colored glasses, Pollyannish approach, because I think in a lot of ways that's made the crisis worse. It's like, oh, it's no big deal. It's just like the flu. I won't get that sick. And so these sort of quote unquote positive attitudes toward the COVID have led to the COVID crisis becoming more severe.
Yeah.
And so it's very much grounded in reality and very much grounded in what way of thinking and emotions and actions will help me get through this crisis in the best way with the best possible outcome.
Right, right. And as you said earlier, you know, crises come in all shapes and sizes, and we have multiple crises going on right now, not just COVID. I mean, we have political crisis, we have cultural crisis, we have economic crisis, as some would say, a spiritual crisis going on right now. So there's a lot being thrown at us right now. And the steps that you use in your book, I mean, can be used really for anything in personal life, in work, in the middle of all of this. So I'm glad to have you talking with us today. I want to talk a little about what you call the negative emotion chain. And you say that starts with frustration. You talked about fear just and say that's the most immediate and powerful emotion. But then we move, where does frustration come in? I know where it comes in for me, but for most people.
Sure. Well, a key thing, as you mentioned, is that right now we are experiencing a perfect storm of crises, where all these crises are coming together and having a huge impact on our lives at an individual level, family, community, state, country, and of course, globally. At the same time, they affect us in a very personal way. within ourselves psychologically and emotionally, and also within our families, and our ability to work and our ability to stay healthy. So those are certainly very big challenges we face. Where frustration comes in is, it's interesting, we all know what it feels like to be frustrated. And though you can't see me, I'm going to express it with a sort of little sound, and it's like, okay. Where my body tenses up, and it's like you feel, oh my gosh, what do I do here? But it's interesting to really consider what frustration is. And the way I think of frustration is you're heading down a road toward some goal or some life you want to lead, just like we were doing before COVID struck. And then this giant barrier, this giant wall falls in the path that we're on. And that creates, that triggers frustration. But what's interesting is most people would say that frustration is a bad emotion because it feels bad. But it's actually a very healthy emotion that's evolved for very specific reasons. Because when we're frustrated, we tend to want to it motivates us to clear the path toward our goals, toward the life we want. And so typically when frustrated, we put in efforts to clear that path. The problem is typically when we're frustrated, what we do is do more of the same, harder, of what we've been doing before. Now this violates Einstein's law of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Now in some cases, yes, simply doing things more and harder does clear that path toward your goal. It removes that barrier. But with COVID, because there's so many aspects of it, so powerful, has so many different impacts on different aspects of our lives, that approach simply doesn't work. Because simply doing what we were doing more and harder is simply not going to work. We have to do different things, and we've been forced to do different things. So very often it's important to be able to step back from that frustration and not get sucked into doing more harder.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And so moving along what you call the negative emotional chain, we then move into anger, which you say can be very beneficial in the beginning because it can help to motivate us. And I know I've certainly been in that situation. But if we hold on to that, it can be very detrimental. So talk to us about that.
Yeah. So like frustration, anger, most people don't think anger is very beneficial. But again, evolutionarily, it has served a purpose. And when we're angry, we're motivated to go after the thing that makes us angry. So again, in this case, it's that barrier of, I can't work, my kids can't go to school, there might be an economic threat to my family, I might get sick, and so on. And so anger, like frustration, is motivating. The problem is that when you're angry, you don't think clearly, you can't focus effectively, and you can't behave in a very thoughtful and deliberate way. So that's where anger starts out as beneficial, meaning it's motivating, but it turns into an unhealthy emotion because you can't clear the path by being angry at COVID.
Right.
Being mad at COVID is not helpful.
Right. Right, and you're using COVID here, but obviously that applies to everything. So can you give us another little science lesson here and tell us where is anger happening in our brain? What's being sparked there?
Yeah, so it's the amygdala. So if you think what's interesting about the amygdala is it's all about survival, because our singular motivation in life is to survive. Because if we don't survive, we don't pass on our genes, and the species doesn't propagate, and we don't survive as a species. And so what happens is the amygdala is part of the brain, is a gateway to all information. And it then produces emotional reactions.
Okay.
So again, Serengeti, 250,000 years ago, face of the rival tribesmen, if we didn't have time to deliberate about how to respond to that rival tribesman with a really big club, if we deliberated, we were pummeled to death. And so it produces that immediate fight or flight reaction. But again, fighting and fleeing is not an effective response to most modern-day crises like COVID. And so if we react that way, it's generally not helpful. And so my idea, making the shift from the crisis mentality to an opportunity mindset, means sort of short-circuiting the amygdala and redirecting all that information to our prefrontal cortex so we can then use our ability to think and deliberate and make choices to decide how best to take the most constructive action in response to COVID.
Right, got it. And then the final and third link in the negative emotion chain is despair. And I was watching Angela Duckworth yesterday. She's a professor of psychology. She's the author of Grit. And one of her things is that the more you care, the more you despair. Do you think that's true?
Potentially so, because there's more on the line. I guess I would disagree to some extent, because if you really care about something, you're much more likely to persist in resolving the issue. But at the same time, if you try and try and try, it seems like a very rational and reasonable thing to despair, to give up, because there's no point in trying to clear that path if you don't believe you can clear it.
Right.
And that's where the crisis mentality can be truly harmful, because as soon as you despair, you give up. And as soon as you give up, you lose the ability to take control and gain mastery over your life.
Right.
And the opportunity mindset is really about taking control of what you can control and going through a couple of other steps that I'm happy to share with you that will, it's not going to resolve the COVID crisis, but it will help you best manage your experience of the crisis, and also helpfully at an individual or family or local level, be a part of the solution to getting through this crisis that we're going through.
Right. I definitely want to look at some ways we can break out of this negative emotional chain. But I just a little bit more on despair there, because I think a lot of, you know, I've been talking with a lot of people, listening to a lot of people, and there seems to be this general low-grade depression, if you will, amongst many people, lethargy, low activity kind of things, which you say is really despair. And so,
yes.
And so,
yeah.
I think recognizing it is half the battle, don't you?
Well, without a doubt. And the problem with depression is you tend to want to just call it, curl up in a ball in your bed and eat Haagen-Dazs ice cream and watch TV all day, or stream episodes, you know, do what's it called with binge watching.
Binge watching, right?
But that actually just feeds into it. You just want to lay in bed, which means physiologically you're down. Psychologically, you're not focused on anything beneficial. It's an unhealthy state to be in. And there's no doubt that early in the COVID crisis, for example, there was sort of like, this could be a positive thing for people. Families are closer together. It simplifies your life. It's less stressful in some ways. But I found that after about 2.5 months, people have gotten the point, including myself and my family, it's like, we enough already. And also, Vicky, I want to be very sensitive to the fact that for some people, COVID has been a real challenge in their lives. It's really hurt them. Either financially they've lost their jobs, or they've gotten sick, or family has gotten sick. So I don't want to be insensitive to the fact that some people are really suffering with COVID.
Right.
At the same time, a large number of people in the country are relatively untouched by it. I mean, I live in Northern California. I know one person who's gotten COVID. And so it's really the disruption of our lives that's been the difficult part of it, not the immediate effect of COVID on us individually or within our families. And so that's really where a lot of this, the focus of my book applies, as well as certainly those who are struggling directly for it. It's just harder because the impact is much more immediate and direct.
Yes, and you know, for many, I mean, even if they're not being touched by COVID at all, there's many are still being financially impacted to a very severe level. So it's very worrisome for many people. So let's look at how we break out of this negative emotion change. I read that you don't like the word coping. Why not?
Yeah, so coping for me is, it sort of touches on just sort of getting by, just managing. And yes, sometimes in a crisis, you just want to manage and cope. But I'm a big believer in mastery, because ultimately, all we can do is control ourselves. We can control the way we think. We can control the way we feel our emotions. And we can control the way we act. And to do that, you can't just manage. You have to master. And so really, the emphasis of my book is, what can you do to master important aspects of your lives that impact how you approach a crisis? And so it might set the bar high, but I believe if you set the bar high, you're going to get closer to a level of response to a crisis that's going to be much more beneficial.
Right. I think one of the things when we're in this situation, you know, we still have decisions to make, and sometimes we have decisions to make that we normally wouldn't have to make. And it's very hard to be decisive when you're in a stressed situation, when there's so much uncertainty around. So what kind of tips do you have to help us get into that decision-making mode?
Sure. Well, first of all, is don't do anything rash. Don't let your amygdala make your decision. Second of all, perspective is so, so important. So it seems like for many people, Armageddon, the end of the world as we know it. And certainly in some parts of the world, it is really significant. But we will get through this. And it's important to have that long-term perspective. So having that long-term perspective, okay, right now, this is a very big thing in our lives. But in 10 or 20 years, we'll look back and go, boy, that was a really difficult time. But we got through it. And for the vast majority of us, we will get through it. At the same time, with that long-term perspective, this also needs to be a short-term perspective. Is what do I need to do now? That's a big question that I'm constantly asking my clients, asking myself. What can I do today to make this experience as good as possible and make the best decisions in response to it? Because a lot of it is very simple at a basic level. Am I going to wear a mask today? Because there are parts of the country where people aren't making good decisions about that. Am I going to keep physical distancing? Am I going to keep working hard? Am I going to keep taking care of my kids and doing what I can to stay healthy? All these things are very important decisions, and yet it's very difficult to do because our life has been disrupted. And that's a word that I use constantly with crises, because what a crisis does ultimately is it takes us out of our routines, our comfort zones, our familiarity. And Vicki, there are three things that human beings don't like, and for very evolutionary reasons. They don't like from unfamiliarity, unpredictability, and lack of control. And this is a triple whammy COVID has put upon us. It's unfamiliar. We've obviously been unable to, even the experts haven't been able to predict the course it was going to follow. And we largely have little control over what's happening. And so what's really important is to do what we can to instill in our lives, and especially in our kids' lives, a sense of familiarity, a sense of predictability, and some sense of control. Because that creates comfort. And with comfort creates the ability to disconnect our amygdala and use our prefrontal cortex, our executive functioning, to think through how we want to approach this and what we can do to approach this in a constructive and healthy and positive way.
Right. Right. You know, many people, and I'm sure you've run into this too, Jim, many people are saying that this time has made them reassess their values. And you talk about this in your book, that some of our values may actually hinder us during a crisis. So could we look at two or three that hinder us during a crisis and look at values that help us during a crisis?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm a big believer in values. And unfortunately, values have been hijacked and they become sort of political hot buttons. But when I talk about values, I'm talking about all the values that, regardless of where you live or your political orientation or your religious beliefs, we can all agree on. And it's, you know, responsibility and compassion and ownership and all these different types of values. And I'm a big believer that values provide us with solid ground. If we can go back to what do we value, that gives us some solid ground to stand on making decisions moving forward. They also can act as our North Star of what direction do we want to go. And what's been really wonderful, and it's hard to use the word wonderful when talking about any kind of crisis, especially something as significant as COVID, but we tend to just maintain the status quo of our lives because that's the life we have, and it's like being in a river without a paddle. You're just going with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the COVID and this disruption that it's caused is given us time to consider what kind of lives we want to lead. So, for example, you know, commuting 2 hours into the city, is that really worth our time? How do we want to – it enables us to ask the question, how do we want to spend our time in the most useful and deliberate way? And that goes to values and priorities, because we typically spend our time, we spend our money on things that we value. And so we haven't been able to spend money on certain things these days because of COVID. We have, in a way, more time. And that is a wonderful opportunity for so many of us who work really hard. and who just don't have the time to step back and sit down and go, you know what, this is a chance to sit down and really evaluate the life we're living. And is this the life we want to lead? And so it enables us to consider other ways we want to live our lives and to maybe reevaluate some of the values that have been driving our lives to this point.
Yeah, and we're probably not going to have any kind of opportunity to do that like we have now, because, you know, there's a push to get things back to normal, and I don't think we'll get back to normal. We have to create a new normal for ourselves, and I think this is that perfect opportunity to really reassess our values there.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up, Vicky, because I wrote a blog post about a month or so, a series of them. One is started with the idea that this is, like I said, an opportunity to reevaluate your life and decide what's important and perhaps make some changes. Another one I followed up with was, the reality is that unless COVID continues for a very long time, we will all probably go back to the way we were. And that sounds a little bit pessimistic, especially if you're somebody with a PhD in psychology, but the reality is that we create lives that reinforce the lives we have. And so we have our jobs, we have our daily habits, our routines. And realistically also, for most of us who have the ability to create the lives we want, even though it's not always exactly what we want, because life can be a rat race and family can be stressful, we more or less we like the life we have, otherwise we wouldn't live it. And also, habits are hard to break. They are wired into us both psychologically, emotionally, and neurologically. So even 3-4 months is probably not enough time to break those habits. And so as soon as normal returns, and however that is, and if it's not that new normal, we will likely probably fall back, for most of us, to our old ways, unless we make this very significant commitment to, I learned some lessons during this crisis,
right,
and I am committed to making some changes in my life.
Right. I want to ask you personally, because I know I've learned a lot during this crisis, what have you learned personally? Have you readjusted your values at all?
Yeah. So first of all, I've been very fortunate that I've been able to create a life for myself pretty much exactly the way I want. And not because I'm rich, I'm not a rich person, but because I've had a passion for my career, and I've earned enough good enough living to create a life that I've wanted. So there won't be any major changes in my life. At the same time, a couple things it's shown me. One is the importance of staying connected with people. And I wrote another blog post early on that was actually an op-ed in the San Francisco Chronicle that said, stop calling it social distancing.
Yeah.
Because I'm a word guy. I write, I speak, I consult, and so words are very powerful things for me. And social distancing is the wrong phrase, because the government is telling us to socially distance. That is such the wrong thing for us to do. Do we need the physical distance? Absolutely. But at a time like this, crises cause us to circle the wagons, a little cowboys and Indians metaphor from those old movies, to protect ourselves. And that's so we isolate ourselves, and that we need to isolate ourselves physically to a degree, but we need to stay connected socially. And that's one great lesson I've learned, is that I've really been much more proactive in reaching out to people, whether through social media or Zoom, or also just connecting with people at 6 feet with a mask on.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to get through this together. We can't do this alone. Unlike the rival tribesmen with the big club fighting him so alone, we need to do this collectively. So that's been an important one.
Yeah.
Second of all is really appreciating the value of time with my family. And this cuts both ways, Vicky, and hopefully it'll give you a little chuckle. Because the first month or two, I'm thinking, like, this is so great. I'm with my kids all the time. I'm with my wife. This is really, we've been able to really do things together. This is great. But I think most families would agree that we've passed the point that it's still really wonderful. That, you know, being 24/7 with your wife and kids, or your spouse or partner and kids, it gets to a breaking point. And so there's also need to have time to ourselves, where we can get out and exercise and go to a movie. Can't go to a movie, sorry. Or we get out and do a hike, whatever it might be. where we need to have some separation there as well. Otherwise, we're going to drive all of ourselves crazy, and because that's been what's happened in our family to a degree. So I think personally, my life is probably not going to change that dramatically, but it's really highlighted what's important to me and making sure that I continue to lead the life that I want to live.
Right. Well, it sounds good. We're almost at the end, and I want to just squeeze this in real quick because I see a lot of herd mentality right now. And there was something that my father was big on, you know, he would not allow me to go to concerts until I could separate myself from herd mentality as a teenager. But what do you have to say about that and the impact that that has?
Yeah, so this is sort of a bottom-up and top-down messaging issue for me. You're seeing a lot of people in the country engaging in herd mentality and engaging in some very unhealthy behaviors, like you see it in bars, at parties, and so on. And you're even seeing it in schools. And I was just traveling through some other parts of the country on a family vacation, and people not following the rules. And so the messaging from the top is very often, oh, it's not that important to wear a mask, or don't keep social distance, or you can get together and there's not much chance of getting it, or I'm young. And then people hear these messages from the top, and they see other people doing it, so they say, well, it must be okay. And what we really need right now is a herd mentality that's focused on, first of all, the facts, on best practices for dealing with COVID, trusting the experts, and doing what's not just best for us individually, but doing what's best for us collectively as families, neighbors, community members, states, countries. Because, like I said earlier, we are not going to be able to, we can't do this alone. We need everybody to be rowing, grabbing an oar and rowing in the same direction.
Absolutely.
And yes, as we know, without getting political, there's some real political challenges in terms of how to deal with that. But bottom line is, selfishness is not going to work. And we need to get people a herd mentality of what's best for us, all of us as a country, because we are ultimately all in this together, and we're not going to get out of it individually.
Right. And a little kindness and compassion goes a long, long way. Well, Jim Taylor, such a pleasure talking with you. Some great information you shared today. The book is How to Survive and Thrive When Bad Things Happen, 9 Steps to Cultivating an Opportunity Mindset in a Crisis. And boy, we need this right now. And I know listeners can find out much more about you at drjimtaylor.com, drjimtaylor.com. A final thought you'd like to leave us with today?
I think just putting this in perspective, that we will get through this, and it's going to have some challenges, but we'll go back to some sort of normal, and it might actually be a better normal, while at the same time also look at what you're doing every moment of every day and make good choices that's best for you, for your family, and for our country.
Yeah, I'm going to keep that in mind. Focus on a better future. That's great. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Jim Taylor. Really appreciate your time today.
My pleasure, Vicki. It's been fun.
If you have questions, comments, or feedback regarding today's podcast, you can reach me on our website at conversationslive.net. Thanks for joining us today. We'll have a new podcast go live next Wednesday. Until then, live well, live strong.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversationslive.net. That's conversationslive.net today.